Hi, welcome back. We're back in front of the whiteboard once again. How did you find that demonstration and the deconstruction? What you most likely noticed was that we didn't hold anything back. There might even have been times throughout the discussion you might have found yourself squirming a little bit inside, saying something like, "Kane, how can you ask your wife questions like that?" In front of a global audience. Well, to be honest with you, as I've mentioned, we wanted to give you a real-time experience to show you what a personal breakthrough session actually looks like when it's being done well. I have honestly delivered more personal breakthrough sessions over the years than what I even care to remember, possibly in excess of thousands. What used to take me, anything up to half a day, perhaps 3.5, 4 and a half hours, to achieve going back 5 or 6 years ago, today it takes me maybe half an hour or 45 minutes tops. Right, so what I'm saying here is to carry out a personal breakthrough session well, it's just a time thing, it's just time and experience. The more we practice, the better we become. Now, here I want to give you a framework, right, to help you understand and be able to identify what it is that you're looking out for, right? In terms of unhelpful habits, unhelpful attitudes that your client is going to be, or your clients are going to be subscribing to. When we start addressing those things, asking questions, it gives our client this opportunity then to break through where they're currently at and into something new or better. So this brings us on to the choices of maturity and character. Now remember, we're all brought into the world as little bambinos. We're all wet behind the ears. We're all figuring things out as we go. All right, so it's never going to be fair of us as human beings to give other human beings, put them through the run of the mill, give them a hard time for being imperfect because they're just as imperfect as us. We're all on a journey of maturity and growth. And the pace that we progress on this journey is ultimately going to be determined by our ability and willingness to grow out of old habits that don't serve us and into better ones that do. What I'm going to suggest is that our habits are sometimes attitudinal by nature. By this, I mean we have some pretty bad attitudes that we subscribe to. They're not just actions or behaviors, all right? Our attitudes are 9 times out of 10 born out of the beliefs that we have about ourselves, about the world, about our parents, about how they relate to us, about society, about how lovable and good we are, and so on and so forth. The limiting beliefs that we subscribe to in life can be unlimited by nature. All right, so all that we can really ever gauge and respond to are people's actions, their behaviors, and their attitudes. Remember, I mentioned this right back at the start of section one of the course. All right, we can gauge where a person's at by gauging their attitudes, behaviors, and their attitudes. So, as a life coach, as a mentor, as a helper of other people, as a husband to my wife, as a friend to my buddies in life, what I'm always on the lookout for are ways that I can add value to people's lives. And when I'm talking about adding value, I'm not talking about giving people money or buying people stuff. I'm talking about asking better questions that are going to provoke and challenge those people that I care about to reflect more upon themselves for the purpose of growing. Because what I know from experience is that the higher I go, the better it is. All right. Having been in that place of victim mindset and all that kind of stuff, it's horrible down there. All right. It doesn't serve us, doesn't serve anyone else. And it's certainly not fulfilling in any way. So, in my experience, as I've kind of become more aware of myself over the years, I've certainly found life to be more joyous and a bit more of an exciting adventure. So, here, what I'm now able to do is simply identify with relative ease and also address through appropriate questioning the unhelpful attitudes, habits, and behaviors that I see other people subscribing to. Now, what I'm talking about seeing, it's not like I'm actively watching people's every move and every habit and every action and every behavior, but what I'm generally doing is discerning where a person is at through hearing and seeing the words that they are saying. All right, coming back to that word again, discernment. So, Here we want to look at the helpful and the unhelpful attitudes that people subscribe to in life. This gives us context and a framework for being able to ask appropriate, challenging questions that are going to invoke people to reflect upon themselves. I want to remind you of this idea that I shared with Karen two videos ago, and it was about a conversation I had a few years ago with a guy. I used to ask him some pretty tough questions as well about himself, why he would say and do some of the things that he would say and do. And he would say to me, "Cain, what is truth?" Kind of expecting me to give him some sort of philosophical answer, like, you know, truth is whatever. There's all sorts of crazy responses to that question. But I'm guessing when it comes to the way in which we live our lives, the only relevant truth is going to be how we are in the context of our day-to-day relationships. And this is building upon the idea that the quality of our life is pretty much always going to be determined or heavily influenced by the quality and the caliber of our relationships. Now, what Karen's primary goal is and what Karen's major issue has historically been has been related to how she relates with people and how she also relates to herself. All right, so it goes without saying that we make peace with truth once we have accepted that which is true. And that's the purpose of a personal breakthrough session, to lead our clients into a greater degree of insight into that which is ultimately true for them. But it is up to our clients whether they take responsibility for that which is true or that which isn't. Now, this ties in with the openness and receptiveness part of the standard that I shared back in section one, all those hours ago now, if you'll remember. When we take responsibility for that which is true for us, we become automatically empowered to surpass it and move beyond. Remember, people will not change until the desire to change becomes greater than the desire to remain the same. And I'm so sorry for being so repetitive here, but listen, this is a really, really important critical factor that we got to buy into and appreciate as life coaches. Until a person wants to change and until a person is ready to change, they most certainly will not change. Doesn't matter how hard we try or how many awesome questions or how many techniques or how many tools we try to throw their way. Until they're ready and willing to change, they will not change. And a person will not change until they've taken responsibility for that which is not working and serving them in their life. All right, so we're brought into the world as children, and we're generally, brought into a family of sorts, be this a functioning one or an unfunctional family, whether we have a mum and a dad or two dads or two mums or a mum and a dad, and then we have a dad that dies or a mum that dies or something like this. We all have a parental upbringing. And it's through the earlier years in life that we start making decisions and arriving at conclusions and making assumptions about who we are, who we aren't, what we are capable of, what we're not capable of, what we can do, what we can't do, and what we should do, what we shouldn't do, whether we are going to throw ourselves at life 100 miles an hour or whether we are going to apathetically refrain, if that's even the right word, as we saw Karen had done over the last couple of videos. So responsibility is obviously a helpful attitude in life. The more we take responsibility for ourselves, for our flaws, our imperfections, our inconsistencies, the more empowered we become to surpass them. Why? Because we're all naturally gravitating towards being better human beings. And you're not going to have so much of a problem with this, especially in a life coaching context. If a person's coming to you for coaching, it's because they ultimately want to move forward in their life in some way. Now, again, as I've mentioned, in terms of a personal breakthrough session, unless a client really genuinely does trust you, unless you have earned their trust and are in good rapport with them, they're most certainly not going to be okay with you asking questions of an intimate personal nature like those which I asked Karen over the last couple of videos. But when we do ask our clients tough questions and when they do eventually take responsibility for owning their stuff, they become automatically empowered to break through the stage of life that they may currently be stuck in. Are you with me? Until a client takes responsibility for themselves, they will not change because we cannot change them for them. Irresponsibility breeds disempowerment. Responsibility breeds empowerment. Humility versus arrogance and pride. Now, do you remember the question I asked Karen about apathy? I said, Karen, is it really low confidence or is it apathy? Now, granted, that was a tough question. Even inside of myself, I could say, oh my goodness, I would not want to be on the receiving end of a question like that. All right, Karen done quite well to keep it together. She didn't get angry or anything like this, but she had one of two attitudes she could have taken, one of humility and honesty, or one of arrogance and pride. Arrogance and pride would have looked like this. No, it certainly isn't. It's low confidence. I'm a victim. And she would have gone on to protect her habit of a lifetime, all right, which is ultimately what prevents many people from ever growing out of the unhelpful habits that don't serve them in life. It's humility that serves us and other people the most when we humbly own our flaws, our weaknesses, our imperfections. All right, you know what? I don't have it all together. You know what? I am not a perfect communicator. You know what? I am a million miles away from being at that place of life where I really want to be. You know what? I don't fully understand my past. You know what? I am not the perfect husband. You know what? I am not the perfect father. You know what? I am not the perfect boss. I am not the perfect friend. Humility. It's attractive, isn't it? And when we're operating out of a place of humility, I don't have it all together, I'm not the tough guy, I'm not the big man, I don't have all the answers just yet, all right, we generally tend to attract a different type of people in our life than those people we attract when we're operating from a place of arrogance and pride and I've got it all together and I'm the hot shot and I'm okay, I'm an island, I don't need anyone apart from myself. We're looking at the difference here between openness and closedness, right? And what works and serves us in a coaching relationship also works and serves us in pretty much every other relationship that we could engage in life, right? If you have many people in your life, lots of close-knit friends and relationships, then it's most likely because you're quite good at operating from this place of humility. If you don't have no friends, if you don't have too many intimate relationships or people in your life that you can really trust and be yourself around, my friend, I would urge you to check yourself before you wreck yourself any further or anyone else in the process. A helpful attitude versus an unhelpful attitude. Now, arrogance and pride is more of a defense mechanism, as Sigmund Freud would have discussed going back around about 100 years ago. He referenced defense mechanisms, all right? These habits and attitudes that we embrace for the purpose of defending and protecting ourselves. Well, as you notice with Karen, I asked her a couple of very, very personal questions, and she could have gone on defensive, but instead she chose humility. Oh, okay, that's true. And again, what I'll just wrap this idea up is just by saying that we'll never move beyond a habit or an unhelpful attitude until we've accepted the truth about the part that we're playing in the outcome that we've got in this stage of our life. So, it goes without saying, slow to anger, quick to anger. Karen could have got angry when I asked her that nasty question. But she wasn't, right? She refrained. She managed herself. Now we're tying back in with that idea earlier on. Self-awareness breeds self-management. Self-management overflows into social awareness. Social awareness rolls over into social management. So the degree to which we're able to manage ourselves is going to determine how effective we are at influencing other people. And I've never, never known an angry person to be of influence. No, I've not. How do I know this? Because I used to be an angry man back in the day. Definitely not. There was a book I read years ago when I was studying political theory called The Prince by Machiavelli. And one of his core ideas or ways of thinking was that it's better to be feared than loved. What I would suggest is that it's better to be trusted than feared. All right. It's better to be trusted than loved or feared, right? Why? Because when people trust us, they know where they stand with us. And sometimes love is a choice, isn't it? So when we're slow to anger, this gives us more time to reflect and think and respond appropriately, all right? If we're operating from a place of anger, we're again more often than not, operating from a place of defensiveness, where our goal is more to protect ourselves than actually grow. All right, so a helpful attitude is being slow to anger, and an unhelpful attitude is being quick to anger. Let's look at the world of politics today. And I'm not really into politics too much, really not too impressed with too many politicians around the world these days, but there are some men and women who are avid promoters of unity, and there are some men and women who are avid promoters of disunity. What I'm going to suggest is that it demands a hell of a lot more from us, all right, to be pro-unity than what it does pro-disunity. I can give you an example. Right back at the start of mine and Karen's marriage, and she won't mind me sharing this because we're quite open people, we struggled, all right? It wasn't that I'd had role models or people who'd shown me how to coexist in a healthy marriage, and Karen hadn't had this either. So the first few years of our marriage, we really struggled, to the point where we were both that different. Karen having come from her religious background, me having come from my military background, we were kind of like chalk and cheese. So choosing to remain in a relationship with each other was a little bit difficult sometimes. Karen, who would operate from this place of apathy and holding back, me operating from this place of running at life a million miles an hour, you know, you can imagine the conflicts that would arise every now and again. But here's the thing, all right? In marriage, we take what's called a set of wedding vows. I know this is referred to as being old school and not important these days. I would beg to differ, all right? I would say that marriage is one of the most character refining and defining relationships we can ever be in life, all right? How willing are we to honour the commitments that we make? How willing are we to remain integral and true to the promises that we make other human beings? You know, throughout our marriage, or my marriage with Karen, there have been times when I did not feel like remaining committed. There have been times I did not feel like I loved her. And it was through those times and in those situations that I chose to honour my commitments instead, understanding that we're all on a journey in life and that we all have the capacity to grow beyond the stage of life that we're currently in. And when we understand this one idea, it makes it very, very easy to be pro-unity, right? If we look at the world of politics again today, here in the United Kingdom, currently we're going through this Brexit drama at the minute, and we have some people want the United Kingdom to separate from Europe, and then we have people in Scotland that want Scotland to separate as a nation from the United Kingdom, and so many people around the world are pro-disunity, all right? It requires effort, hard work, to remain in unity with other people. But I'm going to suggest that this is more character defining than what being disunity. I don't see eye to eye with that person. Meh. Away with them. I don't like this nation's ideals. Well, away with them. We are different people from those people. Let's separate and go our own way. It's easy to like those people in life who are just like us. It's slightly more challenging to like and get along with those people in life who don't see eye to eye with us. But here's the thing. If you've ever heard the saying that iron sharpens iron, in the same way, people sharpen people. And how I found that I've grown at the fastest rates throughout my lifetime is when I've immersed myself in the company of other people who are completely different from me. Why? Because there's one of two attitudes that I could take towards people who are different from me. I could set myself up on this self-righteous pedestal and say, my way is the right way, your way is the wrong way, my opinion's right, your opinion's wrong, my world philosophy is the right world philosophy and you are wrong. Or I can come from the attitude, you know what? I don't understand you. I understand my worldview. I understand my way of thinking and acting and behaving and being. I don't understand yours. How about we go for a coffee, have a few conversations to help me understand you. I'm going to approach this relationship from a place of unconditional acceptance, unconditional positive regard. I'm not going to assume the worst of you. I'm not going to assume that you're bad just because you're different. All right. Instead, I want to understand you to see if there is a way that we could eventually, possibly, work together in unity. Just acknowledging that two people working together are going to accomplish more than what one person working on his or her own is ever going to accomplish. Three people working together are always going to accomplish more than two. 10 people working together in unity are always going to accomplish more than a handful of people working alone in isolation. Some people would say that we're better working, doing our own things. Some people would say we're better together. This is the kind of Brexit argument. We don't want to go on about that. I'm just going to suggest that promoting unity requires a lot more from us than what promoting disunity does. I'm going to suggest promoting unity, being for unity, is a helpful, healthy, mature attitude we can take towards life, whereas disunity is kind of the easy option, all right? But it's entirely up to you. I'll let you choose.